Hey guys, this is Colin from Blackjack Apprenticeship, and we are live in Las Vegas. Well, not live when you listen to it, but we are currently in Las Vegas, and I have with me SD1, who is a Blackjack Apprenticeship member, a bootcamp grad, and a part-time, though not part-time in terms of profits, advanced player. So SD1, how are you doing?
I am doing awesome, Colin.
Is it safe to say you're a multiple six-figure AP?
Yes.
That's what I was going to say.
Yes.
I could re-record it, but we'll just roll with it. multi-six-figure AP. And, you know, before we get into some of that stuff, let's back up a little bit. Well, when did we meet?
About 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, it feels like I've known you for more than 2 years.
But, yeah, likewise.
Is it two or three? I think it must be, was it 2017 that you went to the boot camp?
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was. It must have been.
Okay.
Yep. So 2 years ago. Wow. Well, it feels like I've known you for a lifetime.
Lucky you.
That's crazy, man. 2 years, and now you're like one of the pros on the site. Well, okay, let's back up even further before we get to that stuff and just tell us about your background. Is there anything kind of like your formative years that you feel like maybe had an influence in your personality that you were drawn to advantage play?
I would say that I have a natural inclination to entrepreneurship.
Uh-huh.
That would be the first thing.
Do you think that's just genetic or?
I don't know the answer to that. I read books that said both ways, but I'm not exactly sure. I think it can be, but I think entrepreneurship can be learned too. But when I was 12 years old, I had a lawn business where I had three employees that were older than me. So like I've kind of always from a young age thought that way.
Uh-huh.
Sales now, which national sales, so it's basically the same thing. I run my own business just with the backing of a big company. I'd work from home. Mm-hmm. I'd travel the country and sell. So, but yeah, I don't know. A lot of the podcasts I've heard people say that they've had inclinations of, you know, they thought this way or that way. I don't know that I really thought like an advantage player as a young person or anything like that.
But you had an entrepreneurial drive.
I did.
It's kind of needed to do this.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to just be told what to do,
yeah,
get a job.
And I thought in terms of EV also, even though I didn't call it EV.
Did you have any other background in investing? Have you invested before? Or?
Yeah. So out of college, so I DJ'd and bartended my way through college, which was funny because it was a Bible college.
Nice.
My primary college. And when I got out of college, I went straight into the financial market. I worked for one of the largest financial research firms in the U.S., which is ironically based in the great state of Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And worked for the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, learned about options trading, complex derivatives, blue chip stock trading, and I guided clients in that way, and as well as trading myself. So I kind of had that background and understood variance.
Yeah. Well, that's helpful.
Yeah, it is.
And what about, you know, I'd say there's an element of risk-taking being an advanced player. Are you at all familiar with any risk-taking activities?
While being an AP?
Well, before.
Oh, yeah. So
you don't need to say what.
Yeah. No, I will. So I am also a skydiver, and it's really weird because I'm part of these two niche markets or niche communities, really, of AP play and skydiving. I mean, there's only 35,000 licensed skydivers in the entire United States.
Well, that's probably still more than the number of
true
professional or semi-pro APs.
Yeah, that is true. And that cool thing about that community is like I pretty much, if I don't know you, I know you through one other person,
uh-huh,
1 degree of separation, probably very similar to
love
AP.
It.
But yeah, so risk is not a a foreign thing to me, but I'm not what you always want to assume that if somebody jumps out of a plane or if somebody professionally gambles that they're this huge, huge risk taker, yeah. they're an adrenaline junkie or whatever. And I'm not that at all. Everything yeah. is calculated with me. Yes. It always has been.
Yes. And that, yeah, it is a big difference. You know, I think there's a level of to jump out of an airplane, you have to be willing to face fears.
Yeah.
To sit down and place those large bets at the blackjack table, you got to be willing to face fears.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you are reckless.
Right.
So that's maybe a distinction.
Yeah. It's in skydiving, it's facing fear is a big thing. And I have over 2,500 jumps now at this point. And it's, well, every now and again, I still get that little flutter mm-hmm. in my stomach. But it's not about jumping out of the plane anymore. It's about nailing the dive that we have planned. It's the more competitive aspect. So it evolved, and it's the same thing with AP play. In the beginning, you know, if I could say anything to the young card counters out there, your hands are going to shake, you're going to get cold, yeah. you're going to be nervous. Eventually, it becomes you're pushing the bets out, and it's just automatic. At the same time, I still have some small nerves when I'm counting cards because I have those nerves based on executing and playing perfect, mm-hmm. which is the same in skydiving. It's not about jumping out of the plane. It's about executing and doing what I'm trying to do in the air with my fellow skydivers. Mm-hmm.
And I think with both, there is a level of uncertainty that you can know that you're betting within acceptable risk, but you don't know what the short term is going to be like. And right. I imagine jumping out of an airplane, you can have everything prepared, but there's just a level of you're not, you know, whether it's rational or not, there's a level of fear of uncertainty.
Yeah. And it's funny, whenever you jump out of a plane, I was taught by an instructor very early on that you tell yourself when you're doing your gear check, when you're in the plane, right before you go out the door, you tell yourself, I'm going to have a malfunction. Mm. Something's going to go wrong. You say that in your head, even out loud, wow. however you want to do it. That way, when it happens, well, yeah, I said this was going to happen. And it's not like, oh, crap, I didn't expect this to happen.
Yeah.
That kind of correlates a lot to blackjack, because when I go into a place, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to get backed off. Let's uh-huh. see how much EV I can get before I get backed off.
Yep. Yeah.
And I expect it.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not prepared for backoffs or for losses, you know, you're going to get ground out way too fast. But if right. you know, hey, yeah, I'm going in here knowing there's a good chance they're going to walk me out the door. And there's a, 45% chance I'm going to walk out with less money than I walked in with. You're going to be emotionally prepared for what you may face.
That really helped me too, because as you know, my first like 140, 150 hours, I was in the red.
Yeah.
I had lost nearly 40% of my bankroll. And every time I went up a little bit, I actually got to a point where I was like, oh, sweet, I'm break even again. And yeah. immediately dumped like 10 grand.
Yeah.
$8,000 on one shoe.
I've been there. So I want to talk about that specifically, but let's back up to how do you find out about card counting and discover blackjack apprenticeship?
The Lord told me about it. I honestly,
while you were DJing, bartending,
I was in church, and Ben actually attends the same church I do, not the same location, but the same church. He doesn't live all that far from me. And we were doing a campaign at church that was all about giving more money. This is everybody that doesn't like church is going to be like, oh, of course they were asking for more money. But it's all about giving more to give more outside of the church, like not a dime of this money. So it was like a campaign, but not a dime of this
money. Just generosity.
Yeah, not a dime of it went to the church. It was for amazing things like building an AIDS hospice in Africa, fighting sex slavery, et cetera. So he gave a talk on, because it's a multi-site thing, he was on a giant screen, and he gave a talk about his perception of money and how it is completely different. And that was all because of his experience in blackjack, and talked about the church team. And it was an amazing message in terms of like, this is a tool. Not only that, it's not his, it's ultimately God's, and if God wants it, which I'm I fully support. But he, when he talked his way through money as a tool, and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of, that's definitely how I view it, especially with my stock market background.
Yeah.
So, my wife actually looked over at me in church and was like, you could totally do that.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that was a green light.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything else. There was no asking of permission. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm going to look into that. And I bought a membership to BJA that night.
That's
or the
funny.
Next morning. I can't remember which.
Yeah. And so you started training, just watching the videos and yep. all that stuff, using the training drills or
yep.
something. That's right. Yeah, you used just our training drills.
I'm 100% BJA trained. Okay. Zero other tools have I used. I bought CVBJ,
uh-huh.
and I have never opened it.
Oh, that's funny. You know what? I don't think you're the only person. I've talked to other people, and – you know, it can do powerful things that our software can't.
Yeah.
But really, I think what we've always wanted to focus on, or I've always wanted to focus on, is just helping train card counters. You know, what's the most useful? What's going to be the most seamless way to get someone tested out and care less about the bells and whistles? But I'm glad it worked. And then you came to you started playing, or you came to boot camp. What was the order?
I practiced a lot and got to the point where I thought and felt that my game, I wasn't 100% sure because I had not been tested out, that it was perfect, but I felt it was a winning game.
Uh-huh.
So I went to a casino more than a few times and back counted. And then I played, I don't know, maybe one or two sessions before I came to boot camp.
Okay. Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I thought you played a little more than that.
No.
Okay. A couple sessions, training or practice sessions or playing sessions.
Yeah, and I used your advice. You had actually told me, hey, because I started off with a $50,000 bankroll. That's mm-hmm. what I committed to it, which, is a pretty decent-sized starting bankroll.
Yeah. That's like you could probably go pro with $50,000, I would think.
Well, and you said, hey, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily spread like you need to, like you will be spreading.
How yeah. about,
you know, you just train on it a little bit and use a training spread, which is what I did
mm-hmm.
before boot camp.
Yeah. And then came to boot camp and you were one of two or three people that passed the evaluation, I remember. And it was like, whoa, this guy's put in the training.
Yeah.
You had a lot of questions too.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? You
had Don't let opportunities – that was the opportunity to get everything. You were here. All other pros were here.
Yep.
And I brought a tablet of paper where I had, 50 questions written down. And as they were answered throughout the boot camp, I'd cross them off. And at the end, I think I had two questions left.
Wow.
So the boot camp was awesome. It answered everything but two questions that I had had.
Sign up today.
Yeah.
Just kidding. So you pass evaluation and then it's like green light,
yep.
go start playing.
Go.
And then the rest is history.
I'm a millionaire.
No, tell people what really happened then.
I got crushed.
Mm-hmm.
In my particular area, I got to about 140, 150 hours in locally. And it's a pretty good six deck game. Stand 17 and got one deck pen and I was getting obliterated. Like I had my very first after boot camp, my very first session that I played at a known spot in our area that tends to be sweaty, but I got an hour and a half in and I walked away up $1,100 and I'm like, yes, I won. Okay. This is a good thing. And then the next 140 or 150 hours, I did not win.
Which I remember the other person that tested out, he at that same boot camp as you
mm-hmm.
just had the other.
Yeah, we hung out a lot too at boot camp.
Yeah, and I remember that he was actually playing before the boot camp, and he was winning. I remember he even asked me. He's like, "Colin, I'm way above EV. Should I stop playing?" I was like, "Well, you can." I think his concern was that he was only going to be in the States for a little while, another week or two. And he's like, "I'm way above EV. It'd be a bummer to lose all this money." I was like, "Well, you can, but if you're going to play more in your career, just generate more EV, and if you can stomach it, if you're okay with the fact that, yeah, you could lose everything you've won, you know, the way we operate is we generate EV. And he goes out there, he keeps playing, and he just keeps winning.
Yeah.
And so I remember hearing from both of you guys, and it's like, he's a couple standard deviations above EV, you're a couple standard deviations below EV. Mm-hmm. And then what?
Well, it was funny, a little side story. I went out and played in your state.
Yeah.
And I got to hang out with you a little bit. But I also had, just for confidence reasons, like, I wasn't not confident in what I was doing, but it never hurts to have a boost. I had you check me out again, and
yeah,
I was gung-ho again, just like after boot camp.
Yep.
And that is when I lost $8,000 in a shoe.
Yes, I think I remember that. Yeah. That was when you were in Washington.
Yes.
Was it up in Everett?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes.
And being like, dang, you know, he's passed
away. And I was even. When I showed up in Washington, that's when I got back to even.
Yeah.
And then
and I'm like, all right, get out there and generate some EV, and then you dump $8,000. Yeah, I remember that because, you know, you pass evaluation at the boot camp. But here's the thing. Even with the church team, some people, they get to that point, and then their game actually declines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why after a couple of years, we instituted monthly test outs for our players, where they would get together with each other, test each other out. And I think like once a quarter, I would test everyone out, just because, you know, if I had to do over, I would have had at least that standard, if not higher.
Right.
Because it, worst case scenario, you're wasting some time reassuring yourself that your game is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no harm in that.
Right.
I think some people don't want to be tested out again because they don't want to find out that maybe their game has you know, slid in. But then I evaluate you a second time, but not in a casino environment. And I'm like, well, it's still good. But some people, you take them to a casino, and that's where it all falls apart. So I watch you play in a casino, and it was just fine. And then you keep losing, and it's like, well, either he's doing something different when I'm not watching,
right,
or it's going to turn around.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it never turned around.
Never turned around.
Nope.
Well, it was nice meeting you, and card counting doesn't work.
Right, right.
No, what happened after that?
Not long after that, I had a big winning session, and then my chart, which I've shared on the forums, literally looked like an ascent to Everest.
Yeah.
I mean, it just started going almost straight up. It was insane. And I was like, oh, okay, so good. Yeah, math still works, still checks out. And ever since then, you know, I've had natural pullbacks or whatever, but I'm slightly ahead of my EV right now.
Okay. After how many hours?
590.
Okay, 590.
Yeah.
Cool. And so do you mind sharing what you told your wife when you started about asking?
Oh, yeah.
I think this is really interesting. I think it really depends on what your relationship with your spouse is like. And I think some people, they really need the accountability, or they need the encouragement from their spouse. But I thought this was really interesting. So go for it.
So first of all, like, I am a person that I just want to caution. I keep myself very accountable. I think recognizing your own flaws, which I have many of them, self-accountability is not one of them for me. I still train 3 to 4 times a week. I knew that I was going to be putting my best foot forward and giving it 100%. So I spoke to my wife and I said, hey, I tried to briefly explain N0 to her, put a little cushion on N0 based on the games I was playing, and said, I need you to not ask me where I'm at until I hit 200 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, at 140, 150 hours in, I'm like, oh, God,
yeah.
I'm going to have this conversation with my wife. And I just said, can you do that for me and respect that it's math and it does not matter whether I win a bunch or lose a bunch during that time, early on, in the middle, or whatever. And she agreed to it. And at about 175 hours, she couldn't take it anymore. And she was like, how are you doing? Thank God I pulled out of
So were you at or near EV by 175 hours?
No, because I was only like 25 hours more. But to her, I was up.
Yeah.
So she was like, oh, you made $15,000 doing this. I'm like, I should be making way more.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, that worked out nicely.
And now, okay, well, let me step back and answer or clarify a few things. So one, you use the phrase N0. N0 is kind of like how many hours it takes to get to the long run. It actually, the technical definition is how long does it take to overcome one standard deviation. And one standard deviation does not mean you're at EV. It doesn't even mean you're in the positive.
Right.
But there's a good chance you'll be in the positive by N0. If you multiply that number by 4, that's 2 N0s, which is 2 standard deviations. And you should be approaching EV at that point.
Should.
But you should be. You know, there's going to be an outlier. It's going to be someone way above EV at that point, someone below EV. But, you know, at 2 N0, if you're like way in the negative, there's alarm bells should be going off. But the reason why is, you know, you said your winning was like an ascent to Everest. But that's not because you were due.
No.
It just means that's when the math happened to start working positively.
Right.
And when you were losing, that was the math working out also.
Yep.
But the math of the game is wins and losses. You cannot predict when, but over enough time, there will be more profits than losses. And so you understood it. So that's the other thing I was going to say is you really understood this stuff probably from your background in investing, but I sure didn't know the math well enough or understand it well enough that I would have thought to tell my wife, hey, don't ask. You know, I came home from my first session. It was like, I won. easy money. I think it's great that you educate yourself enough on that. And that at close to, you know, she respected it close. But how
she did pretty well. I was impressed.
That is really impressive.
Yeah.
And now how much do you guys talk about, you know, short term results?
She never asks.
She doesn't ask.
No.
Okay.
There's other AP plays that I'm involved in that I've actually been able to bring her into, which she just thinks is great. Well, sometimes she does. Sometimes she's like, gosh, casinos are terrible. I'm like, yeah, they are.
They're
awful places to be. But it was fun to get her mixed into that and getting her creating positive EV and all that. So,
and probably experiencing wins and losses. And
yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
So yeah, that was good.
So now you've played close to 600 hours over the course of just about 2 years now, or just over 2 years. And that's because you still have a day job.
I do.
And how do you fit that around?
So my job is really unique. I think I said this earlier. I work from home, and I am a national sales guy, so I travel a lot for work to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of casinos in the country. So generally speaking, after I get done with work and I'm in another state, if I work out, if I don't work out, if I eat, if I don't eat, what else am I going to do? Sit in my room and watch TV? No. I'm going to see if there are casinos around.
Yeah.
And so now with that, it doesn't necessarily allow me to shop the best condition sometimes. But it's awesome because I don't have expenses for the travel. So that's kind of a big deal. But it also means I have to work the next day. So the downside of it is, and some of the other pros have talked about this, you know, you find a great game and suddenly you play, you keep playing that game.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
Because I have to get up in the morning for morning meetings sometimes.
Yeah.
So I can't just go and smash them. But, you know, give and take of the whole situation. But that being said, it's still a balance. You know, I have to balance my real job, quote unquote, with my AP life. And there's a lot of things that I've figured out how to do locally that are not Carr County because I am, yes, backed off from all my local places.
Uh-huh.
So there's no local cards anymore. Well, I say that, but
You could try them again.
I could I could probably start trying them again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I might be doing that very soon.
Uh-huh. So, do you enjoy your day job?
Yes and no. I like. I'm an extrovert. I like people. I like what I do because it helps people also. And but it's taxing, just like any job can be. But generally speaking, I don't have a lot of oversight for my job, so that's nice. At the same time, I still have other entrepreneurial things going on, and I would much rather be doing AP Life and things that are solely focused on what I want to be doing. But I don't hate my job by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. So I enjoy talking to people that find that balance because, you know, I did it professionally, but it's my other options were pretty limited, you know, Red Robin or you know, substitute teaching for $90 a day or whatever. I don't regret how I did things, but it's also interesting, you know, I have quite a few AP friends that find that balance, you know, rather than doing the full time thing, and it's fun hearing that perspective. You lose the flexibility of being able to wake up at noon every day and, you know, work or not work, but you also add to that the stability of a paycheck and then AP really works as secondary income or investment income.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my goals getting into this, around 4 more years from now, essentially, I want to have 100% debt paid off, which the only debt I have right now is my house, and have enough put away that I could essentially work at Red Robin and still be very comfortable regardless. And so at that point, you know, I think that there would be a time period where I might, you know, take a year and go smash it AP-wise, but I think AP is always going to be in my life. Just, you know,
yeah,
I take it and pick it up when I want to, like later, and put it down when I want to also.
Yeah. So, well, one of the benefits to working at Red Robin is you do get 50% off your meals. So you do need to take that into consideration.
That's plus EV right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I might be dropping off an application later today. And as far as Advantage Play always being in your life, I like what JC Note says, which is we don't find Advantage Play. Advantage Play finds I think there's something weird, you know, unique.
Yeah.
I use the word weird, but unique about us that we enjoy, you know, finding that edge or using those, you know, the opportunities to our advantage that most other people are like, really? It's like, of course I'm going to. Hell yeah, I'm going to do that.
Agreed. And there are several things that I work hard with, my travel and all that stuff, like credit cards, mileage, that stuff. I mean, I'm going to be able to go to Europe for like 2 months here for free.
And you were saying before we were recording that you flew first class, and that was probably perks from working the flight game. I feel like I learned a lot from other APs. Oh yeah, get this, you know, get this companion pass or get this 7 stars thing. It's like, man, should have known these guys back when we were running our teams.
Yeah.
Could have saved a lot of money.
Yeah.
So back to blackjack. Mm-hmm. Any memorable big wins or losses?
Probably, you know, I've had some big wins and obviously some big losses. Probably the most memorable one was when I went to this game, and it's a really good double deck game, and I dumped 15,000 the first night. I CTR'd, and
that means you had to fill out a cash transaction report, which is never fun as an AP. We don't
know. And I brought 5,000 in chips there through networking community. So, like, you know, sometimes you got to get creative to try to not let that happen to you. And I just kept dumping. And I got their day because casino days work differently than normal days.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, every casino is different. Maybe the next day turns over at 4 a.m., maybe it's 3, maybe it's 5 a.m. And I was wrong by an hour. So I bought in again. Then Mr. SD1, we need you to sign this and fill this out. And I was like, oh, I was like, but it's the next day. And he's like, oh, yeah, our day starts now and or an hour from now. And I'm just like, oh, man. So immediately I'm like, I need to turn this around, like, in his head. And I was just like, I got a problem, man. I got a gambling
oh, no.
problem. And he looks at me. He's like, you've had a bad run. Like, this guy legitimately was like, this is awful for
yeah.
this dude. Awful. So I come back the next day. And I only played there 2 days. And I walk away up $21,000.
Oh, my gosh.
So the funny thing about that was I kept winning. But everybody there was like, oh, my gosh, you got destroyed last night. Like,
yeah.
they could not get out of their
yeah.
head how badly I got beat to
yes.
them the day before, and regardless of the stack of chips that I was acquiring
yeah.
throughout the day, that was not in their heads at
yes.
all.
Yeah, we used to really try to emphasize our losses, you know? So when we have a big loss to the pip, you know, being like, yeah, how much am I down now?
Right.
And then he's like, you know, looking it up like, yeah, you're down whatever amount, and then next time see him be like, oh, that was so awful how much I lost, and
yep.
and then when you're winning, you know, be a little bit more coy about it,
right?
Because you want them thinking about those losses,
yeah,
have those in their mind, and you didn't even have to try, but they definitely had that loss in their mind,
right? And I completely support that theory. I do that as well. I mean, the being perfect and playing the game is only half the battle, maybe less than half the battle. The rest is how you can play the game within the game, and that's the casino staff.
Mm.
And I would encourage anybody and everybody to develop their – I mean, it's commonly called your act, but I would – don't try to act like somebody you're not.
Yeah.
I'm a very – I've played with other friends in our community and, you know, other APs and pros, and – you know, they make the comment, they're like, geez almighty, there's not a place in the casino I can't hear you. You just sound like a freaking gambler. I get pissed with losses. I'll smack a table. I'll celebrate wins.
Yeah.
I'm bold also. You know, we were talking about this the other day. I get really bold with sometimes I'm like, oh, my gosh, that was a lot of low cards.
Yeah.
I'm going to bet a lot now.
Yeah.
You know, I try and I talk up pit bosses until they get so annoyed, or they actually find something in common with me and they want to talk me up about that. And then
yeah.
they're completely talking about whatever it is, football
yeah.
or whatever. And I think that comes with the sales aspect too that I have in my
yes.
life.
Yeah. So members of the church team that had a background in sales were much more natural
right.
in the casino. You know, as long as it's not affecting their ability to keep the count.
Right.
Play.
Nope. Priority one.
Play perfectly, you know, but when you get to that point where you can, you know, play perfectly and have a brief side conversation or talk between shoes or whatever, you know, being able to have that rapport is just really, I think it separates, you know, a technically good card counter with a really effective
yeah.
card counter.
Somehow, some way, that's the only way I can explain the fact that I have not been backed off in Vegas after 57 hours of counting in Vegas.
Wow.
I don't know how that's happened. I've just gotten really, really lucky. I mean, I've picked pretty good games, but it's Vegas.
Yeah.
And it just somehow, I'm going to go play, so we'll see if it happens this trip.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can report back to us.
Right.
When you get your first Vegas back off. But I mean, you have back offs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's right. You said none of your local places. What's your best back off story?
This is a casino out west, and it wasn't that long ago, actually. I went in there, and I got, like, I don't know, 2.5 hours in. I was playing rated, but not playing rated under my name.
Okay, yeah.
So I went there, and previously, they had a lot of tolerance. I heard things had shifted. It's very far away from me. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go at
yeah.
him. I don't care. So I went at him, and a guy came. I switched pits, and next thing you know, I have max bets out for a couple rounds. It was like the third or fourth time I had max bets out, and all of a sudden, I hear a phone just slam down in the pit, and
oh,
the guy
boy.
Just runs over. He goes, stop dealing. And I'm like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, are you playing with a card? And I'm like, yeah, why? And he's like, okay, well, you're done here. Hit the dusty trail. And that threw me off so much that he said, hit the dusty trail. I stopped, I looked at him, I said, hit the dusty trail? I need to write that one down because yeah. I've never heard that one before.
No, me either.
And he's like, well, that's what I mean. Hit the dusty trail. You're done. No more blackjack. And I was like, okay. And a ploppy, the one ploppy that was playing with me was like, what the heck is going on? So I'm like, I got to cash out. And next thing you know, I had 9 suits around
me. Oh, wow.
And this was really funny because there are like 4 windows at the cage at this point, and the suits were lined up blocking the other cage holes off too, which was just weird.
So you could only cash out at one.
Right. But that also had an effect that the line of about 50 ploppies that were trying to cash out ended up waiting over a half hour as tried to grill me and ask me questions. They just didn't let anybody else cash out.
Wow.
And the customer at the casino was, they were all getting really, really mad.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck's going on? So I had this one, the bad cop guy just kept grilling me. And he's like, what's your name? And I was like, you have my card. He goes, what's your name? So I said the name and I was like, but I go by this for short. And he just keeps asking stuff like, how long have you been here? And I was like, sir, you're really making me uncomfortable. This is really weird. I've never been treated this way in my life, at a casino or anywhere. I said, I'm not going to answer any more of your questions. I don't know what is going on here. And I like to always use that to try to flip it on them a little bit. And he screams, you don't have to tell me how to do my job. I said, I'm not, sir. I said, I'm telling you, you're making me really uncomfortable. And I said, I'm not going to answer any other questions. Eventually, the cage is like, okay, we're going to cash you out. So I asked the very strong personality guy, which way would you like me to go, sir? And he said, that way. So I walked to an older gentleman who just happened to walk up like the last couple minutes, and he's the boss. And he's like, hey, so-and-so, this is what I do. This is my name. I'm the, head of security here. I'm like, hey, good to meet you. And he clearly was trying to like the good cop thing.
Yeah.
So, and then he told me I was defrauding the casino.
Oh, wow.
And I said, sir, I work in the financial world. That's a very, very strong word to be using.
Uh-huh.
Because the connotation of that is illegal. And this is the one thing I'll tell you. I've done nothing illegal. And that just shut him down. He just stopped after that.
Good cop was done?
Yeah. And he was like, okay, well, we're going to ask you not to come back ever again. And I couldn't resist. I don't ever normally do this, but this was such a spectacle for no reason.
Yeah.
I only won $2,000.
Wow.
It's not like I took him for a bunch or anything.
Yeah.
So when I was walking away, I looked back and I went, who's not allowed to come back again? And he did not like that. That was dumb. Don't do that, guys. Yeah. but then nobody walked me out, which was weird.
Huh.
But then in the parking garage, there was a security guard on a bicycle at every turn.
Wow.
As I left the premises.
That's so funny.
That's probably the most memorable one.
I love getting followed by the bike security guys.
I was starting to like log my records in the car, and a bike guy came up and knocked on the window. He was like, are you going to leave soon?
That's funny.
And I'm like, yeah. I was like, I'm just putting my GPS coordinates in. Why?
That's funny. Well, I'm glad you got out of there unscathed.
Yeah, unscathed.
But you've had massive wins with no heat, and then a small win with freaking out, bad cop, good cop.
9 suits.
So do you play unrated or rated most of the time?
So
everyone, I'm sure, wants to know.
Yeah, thanks to the guidance of you and Joe, actually specifically, who I went through this at boot camp with.
Yeah.
I play unrated 99% of the time.
Uh-huh.
There are very few places that I have played rated. And that is because of what I know, because of the community, and because of how valuable networking is. But yeah, I'm an unrated player all the way. I do not need the comps.
Yeah.
I like some of the comps that I get where I have played rated, but It's all about EV for me.
If you had to do over, would you do it the same way?
Same way.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe just help, because I get this question so often, and it's like, well, there isn't a right or wrong answer, but maybe people that are wondering, what would you tell them if they say, should I play rated?
No.
Oh, okay. So there is a right or wrong answer for you. Yeah.
You don't
need the free room.
I know why it's a hard question for you to answer, because I feel like it's up to the individual.
Yeah.
For me, the answer is no. I have that many hours in, and mm-hmm. I'm not in the databases.
Yeah.
And I spread – I mean, I'm a black chipper.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I actually all the way up to purple. So I want to maintain that as long as I can. Eventually, I'm mm-hmm. going to get in there. There's nothing I can do about
it.
But the longer I can keep out of them, because like you say, your career's not over just because you go in the databases. And I know that. But the longer I'm out of them, the better.
We would all prefer to not
be. Right.
I have had a couple, back off some really good games that it was not, it was simply that they looked me up.
Right.
If I could have had them look me up and be like, yep, he's clean.
Right.
That would have been preferable. But, it hasn't stopped me from playing or anything.
Yeah, and I'm sure I have entries in with my picture or whatever, but good luck finding a random picture and how many random people, photos or associates are in there, your wife being one of them, right?
Yeah, but she's in there.
You're an official.
Yeah, she's officially in there.
But didn't you have some random dude that was like associated with you?
Yep, it was like unnamed, unidentified male 82 or something that. I'm like, oh, sorry, dude.
So I'm probably in there as unidentified male of several numbers. But that's just, they're never going to be able to do that, especially if you're switching regions. Like, it's not going to.
Yep.
I'm not worried about that.
So when you're going to play, how do you determine your bet spread? Is it, do you try to avoid, do you just feel it out, or do you just adhere to a bet spread all the time?
No. So I want conditions, if I can know them before I arrive. And if obviously they change, then it's going to change how I spread. At this point with my bankroll, the range that I spread in, I mean, I'm working at a zero or slightly above ROR. So I want to know conditions, and that is where networking is a huge deal. And I likewise share with others as well that way. And read your 411, because yes, I do put stuff in 411.
Yeah, thank you.
It depends on what I know about the place. If I'm playing rated, in the few places that I am, not by any means do I spread small or tight.
Okay.
But I spread more conservatively than when I'm playing unrated at like 99% of places.
Yeah.
But I find a comfortable ROR, an EV I'm good with, mm-hmm. and I go.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like you try to avoid certain trigger points of like, checks played type stuff? Or
I don't care if they say checks played.
Table max, sorry.
I don't care if table max either. Because there's a lot of places I've played where the table max is 100, 300, 500.
Yeah.
Yeah, say checks played and table max all you want.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Odds are I'm going to lose the hand the first time you call it anyway. So whatever. I'm not concerned about that. But in terms of triggers, I do pay attention to that based on what I know. If I know there are people in our community that have figured out tolerances and have gotten time in, and the EV is worth it to me,
mm-hmm.
then yes, I will play in that world.
Yeah, and even that it's not a pure science.
No, it's not.
But we use that information to say, okay, well, there's a better chance I'm going to last here,
right?
If I'm not, hitting these certain limits, and I love Richard Munchkin's story of betting two spots of 900, and the pit boss saying, "Oh, are you betting 1,000?" He said, "No." 900. And he said, "Oh, okay. Because if you're betting 1,000, then I have to call surveillance." And he's like, he knew that, and so even though he's betting $1,800 total, they didn't have to get surveillance involved. So that having that information can definitely give you the upper hand, or at least increase your chance of getting in those hours.
It can, but things also change every day. Just
exactly.
I mean, everybody needs to understand that.
Yep. And there were places that during the church team days that would tighten up and then they loosen up again, or, you know.
Yeah, I've experienced that in some places.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe just one or two more questions. What has Advantage Play taught you about investing in things like that outside of casinos, or maybe already knew?
I mean, you're always learning, right? If you're not, you're dying a lot quicker, or whatever they say. I have AP Play in terms of, first of all, an amazing community. I have some really, really good friends, and I'm about enjoying the travels to, like, not just being in a casino the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, I think Joe and others have said that. Maybe you've said that. Spartan, Levi, Mitch have said that, you know, and I made sure I do that when I get out there. But in terms of lessons, I think it's just cemented in my head even more, like, what I've learned previously in my life, which is you got to take the beating. I mean, that's AP Play. That's entrepreneurship. I actually, I was watching Shark Tank last night, and Mark Cuban was commending an entrepreneur that was presenting there and trying to get a deal, and he was like, ideas are easy.
Yeah.
It's taking the beating and getting through what it takes to actually make the idea successful that makes the real successful entrepreneur.
Yep.
Okay, that's the same thing in the AP life. You got to take the beating. There's an analogy. There was a study with – they created, like, – it was about researching on other planets, like how we could – habitate them, and they had this biodome where they had trees and plants and everything was perfect. The soil was awesome and they were growing things, and all these trees just started snapping off in the middle.
Oh wow.
Like, they weren't surviving. It's because they didn't have the wind. They can't survive that way. They had no resistance at all, and they don't grow that way. And I think it's like a perfect just picture of what it takes to be an AP. And the more that can be cemented in my head, even though it's a lesson I know, it's very easy as human beings to forget that, especially when you're in the middle of taking that beating.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the same applies to high-end athletics or skydiving or whatever.
So what are a couple of things that you feel like help you have that, you know, ability to withstand resistance?
Oh, man. Honestly, the biggest thing is I have a very firm foundation in God, and I believe in math, and those two things come together for me because God built the universe on math. Like, everything is built perfectly, mathematically. Uh-huh. And if our moon was barely farther away, then life on Earth as we know it wouldn't happen. So all that, like, I think this big grandiose and what math is, you know, we say trust the math all the time.
Yeah.
You should know if you have a decent education that, yeah, math works. It doesn't really fail. But it's that and my faith in God that created that math that holds the universe together on a string. It's not going to fail. Mm-hmm. If I keep going at it, it's not going to fail.
Yeah.
So probably that is the biggest thing. Plus, I just have a drive to take money from casinos because I cannot stand them.
And then you also mentioned the community.
Yeah. The community is so big.
Trying to do it on your own. I just don't think, I just think you'll snap before too long.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that. Like, I'm a lone wolf card counter, but am I really? Yeah. I don't know that I am because I'm not on a team. I don't play with a team bankroll, but there are a lot of pros here that I have amazing relationships with.
Yeah.
And I can call it a drop of a hat.
But I feel in a way like – running Blackjack Apprenticeship is in some ways it's like running the church team 2.0, where there's a great community of people that are stronger together than on their own.
Yeah.
And yeah, they might not be financially together, but there's a point where the church team, we didn't need more money,
you know? Right?
But what we needed was the camaraderie mm-hmm. and the network. And I wish we would have, been better at networking with people outside of our team. And it's really fun to see that and to see people utilize that and hopefully be better off, as people, not just as people taking money out of casinos,
right.
because of the network.
Yeah. You, Joe, Spartan, Levi Mitch, Ping Pong, JC Rocks. I could go on and on and on with guys that I have and girls too mm-hmm. that I have relationships with because of BJA that have done amazing things to help me make my bankroll grow. But they've helped my soul grow more.
Yeah.
And likewise, I have networked and become really good friends with some APs outside of card counting too, mm-hmm. that have done the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely say embrace that and love that. 'Cause I don't know if I didn't have that aspect that mm-hmm. I'd still be doing this.
And, to be honest, I think a key to this, and we'll wrap it up here. We're getting,
sorry.
No. I could talk for a long time about this, but, you have to be willing to give to receive that.
You know?
And any of those people you mentioned are willing to give information, mm-hmm. But then they also know. And we really tried to instill that in the church team. Hey, you find some great game, you could hold it to yourself. But we're all going to be stronger if we're willing to take the risk of giving and sharing information, because we're also then going to have the kind of culture where we're all receiving as well. And so it's cool seeing, you give back and all the people you listed. And so if you're listening, invest in the networking and don't just say like, okay, I'm going to start asking all the pros to tell all their secrets, but say, hey, I actually want to be someone who both gives and receives valuable information and start with the giving. I heard someone say, hey, if you go to a conference, go into it saying, how can I give? And, if you go to a conference saying, okay, who can I use
right.
to benefit myself? You're going to not make any friends. But
right.
if you go into it and say how can I give to the other people here? You're going to leave with a valuable network.
Yeah. I think that's how we should be with people in general about yeah. everything and all our relationships. So think about it from that perspective. That's a great ad, Colin. You do that and then good things are going to come your way.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sitting down almost an hour now and sharing about your story. It's really fun. Just over 2 years ago, I hadn't even met you in person. And now, to call you a friend and to see you grow that $50,000 bankroll into a couple $100,000 bankroll and also just to have you be a part of this community. Thanks for finally sitting down and sharing your story with us.
Thank you, man. This was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys. For more, check out whatever on the website, get involved with the community on the forum, and we'll say that's a wrap.